Now, one of the judgments which was passed by Imam Ali is regarding two women who had a dispute over a child, where each of these two women claimed that the child belonged to her. Meaning one lady said, "This is my child," and the other lady said, "No, this is my child." So these two women came to Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, to ask Imam Ali to find a solution to this issue. Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, first advised each of these women to give up their baseless and false claim. But both of them continued to insist on what they were saying, believing that the other party's claim was false. And so to resolve this problem, Imam Ali, alayhi salam, ordered Qambar, one of his companions and his servants, to bring him his sword. The two women said, "What is this sword for?" Imam Ali calmly replied, "I will cut the child into two parts and give half of the child to each of you." At this point, one of the two women cried out, saying, "Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, O Commander of the Faithful, if you are supposed to cut the child into two parts, I will give up my claim. Give the child to this other woman." Imam Ali alayhi salam found that the child actually belonged to this woman who was willing to give up the child, and that the other woman who remained quiet, her claim was false. And so Imam Ali gave the child to the true mother, and the other woman whose claim was false took back her word and confessed the truth. Dear friends, we must always be very careful and very intelligent and very thorough when making judgments. And of course, we must rely on the help of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in order to be able to pass judgments which are worthy of the satisfaction, pleasure, and acceptance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. A beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي موسيقى
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection on the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وَأَسْأَلُكَ الْأَمَانَ يَوْمَ يَعُضُّ الظَّالِمُ عَلَى يَدَيْهِ يَقُولُ يَا لَيْتَنِي اتَّخَذْتُ مَعَ الرَّسُولِ سَبِيلًا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger." And I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. And I ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
When Allah says, "Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub," dhikrillah is this. When you remember Ahlul Bayt, when you remember the Messenger, when you remember Allah, you find that your heart wants to get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You find that Imam Ali alayhi salam was hated, loved and hated. Shaheed Mutahhari has written an excellent book. He says, polarization around the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. He's a character that brought people towards him, and he's a man who repulsed people. There were two sides to him. In other words, two sides in the sense that of people. One hated him passionately, and one loved him to the point of giving anything. They could give their whole lives to him. You find the lovers of Ahlul Bayt today, the lovers of Amir al-Mu'mineen today, are proving themselves today. They are the best resistors of any form of oppression. They have meager armaments. They are neighbors of vicious people. Yet they defend the truth. They are fighters. They defend justice. They don't allow injustice. They don't allow oppression. They don't allow their lands to be occupied. They don't allow themselves to be made slaves. They don't allow themselves to be fooled. Why? Because Imam Ali alayhi salam has taught us that if you follow my way, as Allah says, that if you follow this one, then you are of that successful one. You are the one who is the winner. This is a clear command. Imam Ali alayhi salam's character, briefly. And what a gift of Allah that Allah has planted this love of Ahlul Bayt in their hearts. That as lost as they may be, in the nightclubs they may be hanging, salah they may not be doing, they may not be showing to these kinds of gatherings, but it's dormant. It's for you and I to go and get them through the love of Ahlul Bayt. And I'm telling you, it's there because humans love the best examples. Imam Ali alayhi salam is that kind of an example where he never made a person feel bad. His wisdom was beyond comprehension. When he would answer complex mathematical answers, people were stunned. Even the second caliph, he says, how come you answer so quickly? He's asking the second caliph, what is one? How many are these? He says, two. Imam says, how come you don't waste time in answering this? He says, that's how I see. When you ask me such question, when he says, saluni, saluni, qabla an tafqiduni, ask me before you miss me. Why did he say that? Because he has already been endowed with this wisdom. He has been endowed with this knowledge for you and I to follow. But he's just not a man of wisdom. He's a man of action.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
After Coviron vaccine made headlines as the first viable Iranian-made vaccine for the coronavirus, another vaccine now grabs the spotlight, Covpars. Developed by Razi Vaccine and Serum Research Institute, Covpars is a protein-based vaccine. It employs recombinant versions of the spike protein, which tutors the immune system against the virus. This works with an adjuvant, a compound that puts frontline immune cells on battle alert to muster a robust immune response to the protein antigen.
This new vaccine works based on a recombinant spike protein. It's a proven method that has been around since 1980 and has been successfully tested on other diseases such as hepatitis. The first Iranian COVID vaccine used inactivated coronavirus, but this one works differently and can be injected or inhaled.
Covpars is administered in three stages, two intramuscular shots 21 days apart, and an intranasal administration 30 days after the second jab. Developers say not only does this protect the recipient from the virus, but it prevents them from transmitting the virus to others. Simply put, those who receive the Covpars vaccine will not need a mask.
The first two doses give protection against the virus and strengthen the immune system against the coronavirus. The third dose, which is administered intranasally, will block the virus from entering the upper parts of the respiratory system. Therefore, the recipient will not exhale the virus and those around them will be safe.
The first phase of the human trial for Covpars will start next week on 130 volunteers. Developers say the entire human trial stage will take 5 months. Its domestic rival, Coviron, is ahead in schedule and will start the second phase of the human trial next month. At the same time, Iran has imported the first batch of Russia's Sputnik V and will kickstart its mass vaccination this week.
With Covpars making its way to the human trial stage, Coviron now has a top rival on its way toward the market. For now, Iran is a few months away from a marketable local vaccine, and until then, officials say Russia's Sputnik V will dominate Iran's inoculation program. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Yuan has held a national exhibition to showcase its latest scientific and technological achievements on the occasion of the 42nd victory anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. In this exhibition, 160 projects on such fields as healthcare, agriculture, defense, electronics, oil, and nanomaterials were unveiled. 90% of the proposed projects have reached production phase.
We process chitosan, which is a sugar that is obtained from the hard outer skeleton of shellfish like shrimp. Our company has processed chitosan at three grades which can be commercialized. Chitosan can be used in different fields like medicine, agriculture, textiles, and cosmetics, and etc. This will save the country hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Manufactured portable GPU or ground power unit, which is used to start the engines of light aircraft and helicopters. If you fully charge it one time, our GPU is capable of starting engines 9 times. This GPU can be used for devices which need high voltage.
Yuan is a leading country in the region in terms of global innovation. According to the Global Innovation Index 2020 report, Yuan ranks 26th worldwide for the share of its high-tech industries in the national production, surpassing the regional countries such as Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey.
At this exhibition, we are witnessing the emergence of new talents in our society. As you know, the enemies are trying to impose different forms of sanctions on our nation, but we have cut off the hands of dependence. We believe that sanction was one of the great historic opportunities for the Iranian nation throughout history. We have always stood on our own feet, and today the Iranian youth are moving the country on the path of independence.
According to the Scopus International Citation Database, the rate of scientific contributions of Iranian researchers to the world increased from 17% in 2011 to 31% in 2020, becoming the world's leading country in science diplomacy, with 14% growth.
In the past 42 years, Iran has reached self-sufficiency in many fields, including science and technology. And now it has become one of the leading countries in scientific achievements in the world. Sama Kujuri, Tehran.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the country will return to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal only if the United States lifts all its sanctions first. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, is the name of the nuclear deal Iran clinched in 2015 with world powers, including the US. But America withdrew from the accord under former President Donald Trump and reinstated anti-Iran sanctions. Now, the new president, Joe Biden, says the US will return to the deal, but Iran must first return to full compliance. Iran rejects this, arguing that it was the U.S. that exited the accord and breached its commitments. Ayatollah Khamenei says it is the definitive and irreversible policy of Iran that the U.S. should first lift its sanctions. The leader also says that it's Iran that has the right to set conditions on the nuclear deal, as it has fulfilled all its commitments under the agreement. The leader's comments follow calls by some Western countries to renegotiate the Iran deal and expand it beyond its nuclear program.
But I do believe that we do need to finalize indeed a new negotiation with Iran, and President Biden has a critical role. We have to address as well the ballistic missiles issues, and we have to address the stability of the region, and this comprehensive agenda is to be negotiated now.
Iran has time and again stressed that the JCPOA is non-negotiable. The country rolled back some of its commitments in May 2019, exactly a year after the U.S. pullout. Iran did so after the European countries in the JCPOA, namely France, Britain and Germany, failed to make up for the U.S. withdrawal. Tehran has repeatedly said its rolling back measures are fully reversible once other parties fulfill their commitments. Iran says the ball is now in U.S. court. It says President Biden should now decide on whether to continue the policies of his predecessor or choose a new path. Those policies by Trump under his so-called maximum pressure campaign have already been described as a failure, even by some of Washington's closest allies.
Afghanistan received the first consignment of COVID-19 vaccines from India under India's commitments to support the country and health sector. As officials say, the first shipment of the vaccine would be sufficient for only 3% of Afghan population. This comes as Afghanistan is still struggling with the COVID-19 amid shortage of medical equipment.
India have been a great a partner for health sector of Afghanistan in the past years, and this time this is the first country with came out in the first line and support the health sector of Afghanistan by donation of 500,000 vaccines. For sure, these vaccines will be used for the health workforce, which are the first line people against war for the war against COVID-19 virus in the country.
Afghanistan has already received different shipments and aid from China, Iran, and the U.S. to fight the pandemic in 2020. As officials in Kabul say, those at greater risk will be the first recipients of these vaccines. But many have doubted such claims, saying the widespread mismanagement of the first wave of COVID-19 in Afghanistan has tarnished the image of responsible bodies, such as the Ministry of Public Health and some other bodies.
We expect the government to really vaccinate our brave security and defense forces, plus those who are involved in fight against COVID-19 first, in accordance to the latest decree of the president. There must be no mismanagement this time.
The World Bank has allocated $100 million and the Asian Development Bank has granted $50 million to provide Afghanistan with the COVID-19 vaccine. Meanwhile, Iran and China are among those countries that have so far assisted the Afghan government in its fight against the pandemic and the different collaborative attempts.
Based on official figures released by Afghanistan's Public Health Ministry, over 50,000 individuals have been infected with COVID-19 so far. Nearly 2,500 of them have died of the disease. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The Palestinian leadership has praised the International Criminal Court for its ruling that it has jurisdiction in the Palestinian territories, allowing its chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, to investigate Israeli atrocities, despite fierce objections from Tel Aviv. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Ishtayi said the decision is a victory for justice, humanity, and freedom, and for the blood of the victims, namely the Palestinians and their families. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry also praised the ruling and said it's ready to cooperate with the ICC's prosecutor if an investigation is launched.
We urge the International Court and its chief prosecutor to immediately launch an investigation into Israeli war crimes against the Palestinian people. We have already filed several legal complaints against Israel with the ICC. We are now ready to carry out every possible effort to see Israeli military officials and settlers being prosecuted for their crimes.
The ICC's ruling, however, has angered the Israeli regime, as its Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu dismissed the ruling as a political tribunal, accusing the ICC for being a political body and not a legal institution. Israel has not joined the International Criminal Court, but the Palestinian Authority is a signatory since 2015. This means the ICC's mandate is to prosecute people, not countries, including those from states that are not signatories, and in this case, Israeli leaders, military officials, and soldiers who are accused of carrying out crimes against Palestinians.
I doubt that that will make such a difference in Israel, because if we know the nature of Israel and it's based on violence, based on the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people and grabbing the land of Palestine, because of that, I don't think that will make a big difference for the Israeli policies in the region.
The Palestinians have asked the court to look into Israeli crimes during its 2014 war against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip, as well as Israel's construction of illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
The ICC's decision paves the way for the tribunal's prosecutor to open a war crime investigation. But the main question lingering in mind is that will the U.S., which has furiously condemned the court, allow prosecution of Israeli officials and forces over their crimes committed in the Palestinian territories? Mona Kandil, Occupy, Ramallah.
U.S. military personnel deploying from the American mainland to bases abroad are bringing COVID-19 with them. In South Korea, more than 700 United States Forces Korea members have tested positive for the virus, raising alarms in South Korea.
Since Americans value individual freedom and personal liberty, they have tendencies to not adhere to South Korean quarantine guidelines. Therefore, in the case of Pyeongtaek, living with the U.S. military, there is a high risk of exposure to coronavirus.
U.S. Forces Korea soldiers have repeatedly flouted local COVID-19 precautions, including holding a large maskless party. In January, U.S. bases here issued shelter-in-place orders because of COVID-19 cluster outbreaks.
The U.S. Forces Korea Camp Humphreys said in a February 1st press release that less than 1% of its active duty troops had tested positive for COVID-19. If we compare that to how South Korea is dealing with the virus, it's 10 times more likely for a U.S. soldier on a military base here to have COVID-19 than someone in the general South Korean population.
U.S. forces here have begun administering the vaccine, although new cases continue to arrive on almost a daily basis.
It seems that it is necessary to thoroughly manage corona-confirmed patients through testing before entering Korea, and more thorough management measures should be implemented not only for the U.S. military, but also for South Korean employees on the U.S. base who have a lot of contact with people.
Meanwhile, South Korea continues to experience hundreds of new cases each day, with the rollout of a vaccine set to begin here this month. Frank Smith, Pyeongtaek, South Korea.
The International Criminal Court has ruled that it has jurisdiction to examine possible Israeli war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories. In a statement, the court announced that it has decided by majority that its territorial jurisdiction in the situation in Palestine extends to the territories occupied by Israel in 1967, namely the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem al-Quds. The ICC's decision has been praised by Palestinians, with Prime Minister Mohammad Shataye calling it a victory for justice.
The resolution is a message to the perpetrators of crimes that their crimes will not be subject to statutes of limitations and that they will not go unpunished.
The Palestinian Foreign Ministry also called the ruling a historic day for the principle of accountability, and the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas urged the court to investigate the Israeli crimes, describing its decision as a major development. Different international human rights organizations have also reacted, with Amnesty International calling the decision a long overdue step towards justice for victims. Human Rights Watch also described the ruling as a real hope for victims of serious crimes. Israel, which is not even a member of the ICC, decried the ruling, saying the court is a political body, not a judicial institution. As expected, the U.S. officially opposed the court's decision. Experts say the ruling is a game-changer for Tel Aviv and Washington.
Israeli objections to an investigation have no basis. The court has overruled basically Israel's objections to an investigation, which is long overdue at any rate. As far as Washington, President Biden will face an interesting challenge. I expect that his reaction will be considerably different than Trump's.
The ruling came amid Palestine's call for further scrutiny into the 2014 Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, in which more than 2,000 Palestinians, including hundreds of children, were killed. 6 years ago, the office of the court's chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, began a preliminary investigation of Israeli actions in Gaza. In 2019, Bensouda announced that there was a reasonable basis for opening an investigation into the Gaza war and the regime's settlement activities in the occupied West Bank. Ironically, Israel has continued its crimes against the Palestinians and its expansionist agenda, including illegal settlement activities with the tacit support of the United States and in defiance of UN resolutions. International rights groups have long raised the alarm about Israeli atrocities. Last year, the UN also said that Tel Aviv's excessive force against Palestinians holding weekly anti-occupation rallies may amount to war crimes. The latest ICC ruling has dealt a severe blow to Israel, but will the Palestinians get the justice for crimes they have endured for decades remains to be open.
There are many EU legislators who depict Russia as a dangerous adversary that needs to be restrained. They condemn the imprisonment of opposition figure Alexei Navalny and the handling of protests in Russia.
The European Union needs to send a message by not only considering new sanctions, but also by increasing our support to prosecuted, tortured, and repressed voices of the opposition and the civil society.
It's rarely highlighted by mainstream media in the West that Navalny received a prison sentence last month after returning to Russia for breaking the terms of a 2014 suspended prison sentence. Also, Western media never mentioned the global pandemic when reporting on public protests in Russia organized by Navalny supporters. Just last weekend, 500 protesters were arrested here in Brussels, and those detained made claims of police brutality. Mainstream media vilify demonstrators here and in other Western nations for breaking COVID-19 rules, while at the same time portraying protesters in Russia as heroes. The EU and US accused the Russian government of poisoning Alexei Navalny last August. Navalny was treated in Germany after the alleged murder attempt. The Kremlin denies any role and is clearly unhappy that EU authorities refuse to provide medical evidence.
It is quite impolite, mildly speaking, and it is such arrogance from cultural Europe. It seems to me unacceptable, and we categorically reject it.
There are many reasons why Brussels should try to improve relations with Moscow, some EU lawmakers insist.
Well, Russia is a capital neighbor. We cannot ignore that the longest neighbor, the longest border, it is with Russia. Russia is not only an energy supplier. It's as well a strategical relation.
A good case in point, a number of EU nations are now scrambling to get their hands on Russia's Sputnik V COVID-19 vaccine, which is more than 90% efficacious. The EU has major vaccine supply issues. Moscow says it's happy to help. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
People are marching on the streets to show support to the people of Kashmir. This rally in Islamabad is part of a series of events in Pakistan organized to mark the Kashmir Solidarity Day. Pakistan observes the day every year on the 5th of February. Pakistan's foreign minister led the rally in Islamabad and urged the international community to play a role in ending the suffering of the people of Kashmir.
The purpose of our today's rally is to express solidarity with the people of Kashmir. The people of Kashmir have been under siege for the last 18 months. But we want to make it clear that India cannot suppress the freedom of Kashmir forever.
Kashmir has remained under lockdown since August 5, 2019, when India revoked its special status. Thousands of people have been detained, and over 8 million Kashmiris have little access to the outside world.
We are thankful to the people of Pakistan and the government for supporting us. We are hopeful that Pakistan would continue to support us till Kashmir is liberated from India.
We must understand that the Kashmiris are living under occupation and oppression for the past 73 years. And the 5th of February marks a day where we, the people of Pakistan particularly, tell the Kashmiris living across the line of control that they are not alone.
Pakistan and India have competing claims on the long-standing Jammu and Kashmir issue. Both claim the region in full but rule on parts of it. They have fought wars over Kashmir. Where tensions continue to increase, there is a fear of yet another conflict on the dispute between the two neighbors. The country's prime minister visited the Pakistani-administered Kashmir to mark the day.
Prime Minister Imran Khan says Pakistan is ready to take two steps forward if India is willing to seek a political settlement of the long-standing Kashmir dispute. However, given the current hostilities between the two neighbors, experts believe there is a slim chance of any dialogue on Kashmir, at least in the near future. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to the program, Ulama Speech. In today's program, we're going to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. Please stay tuned.
ما انقلاب کردیم یه شرایط خاصی بود یه حکومت استبدادی حاکم بود دستشونده خارجی ها بود همه قدرت ها متمرکز بود در قدرت ارتش و اختیارشون با یک شخص
When we started the revolution, it was under certain circumstances. A dictatorial government was in control. The government was in the hands of foreigners. Power was centralized in the army, and they were under the control of one person. That is the Shah, and his supporters were all foreign governments. Today, it isn't like that. The Pahlavi system broke down, it is gone. So it isn't necessary anymore to support that revolution which came forth due to those circumstances. This manifesto of Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei was released so that on the one hand, we hand over the inheritance of the past to the new generation so that they understand what this Islamic revolution did. Some in the young generation think, oh, some scholars came forth and they did some stuff, whether it was right or wrong. Well, it's over with now. This isn't the issue at hand. Or some think that the revolution is a phenomenon. It has expiration date, which has arrived, so let it die. We must say, no, this revolution is eternal. It is quite possible that it will last forever. This is a point which must be seriously supported and explained. This theory, which suggests that every revolution dies out, is incorrect. It isn't like economic and materialistic revolutions in certain circumstances with certain preferences came into being and then ended because the factors changed. The Islamic revolution isn't like this. Unfortunately, we Muslims, even those who should have been at the forefront of this issue, research it and explain to the people, have themselves become stuck in this negligence. Thank you so much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Epic. Epic. Glory. Honor. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
In the limelight.
The U.S. federal government, as part of its $2 trillion coronavirus relief package approved in March, significantly expanded jobless aid, making it a richer target for fraud. By November, the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Inspector General estimated states had paid as much as $36 billion in improper unemployment benefits, with a significant proportion of that blamed on fraud. In California alone, officials say the fraud totaled at least $11 billion, with $810 million paid in the names of ineligible prisoners. We're prepared for you an article written by Adam Bean. The piece is titled Tax Forms Help Reveal Extent of Unemployment Fraud in United States. The article has been taken from the Associated Press news agency. Please stay with us for more of Adam Beam's article. Unemployment agencies across the United States became lucrative targets for criminals when they were bombarded with claims last year as millions lost jobs due to the coronavirus shutdowns. Now, simple tax forms being sent to people who never collected unemployment benefits are revealing that their identity was likely stolen months ago and used to claim bogus benefits that have totaled billions of dollars nationwide. Unemployment benefits are taxable, so government agencies send a 1099-G form to people who receive them so they can report their income on their tax returns. States are mailing 1099-Gs in huge numbers this year after processing and paying a record number of claims. In Ohio, Bernie Erwin was shocked 2 weeks ago when she opened the mail and found a 1099-G form saying her husband had claimed $17,000 in unemployment benefits last year. The only problem? Her husband, Jim Erwin, an 83-year-old, hadn't worked in 13 years. Bernie Erwin, 86, said her daughter-in-law and a friend also received the tax forms. So did Republican Governor Mike DeWine, his wife Fran, and Republican Lieutenant Governor John Husted, even though none of them had claimed unemployment benefits. Nearly 26 million people requested unemployment aid in the initial months after states began ordering shutdowns. The unprecedented surge strained unemployment offices that are governed by federal rules but administered in patchwork fashion by state governments, with many relying on 1960s-era software to process applications and issue payments. The federal government, as part of its $2 trillion relief package, approved in March significantly expanded jobless aid, making it a richer target for fraud. By November, the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Inspector General estimated states had paid as much as $36 billion in improper benefits, with a significant portion of that blamed on fraud. In California alone, officials say the fraud totaled at least $11 billion. With $810 million paid in the names of ineligible prisoners. Now, overwhelmed unemployment agencies could face another onslaught, this time from people requesting corrected tax forms. A report from the California State Auditor warned about the problem, and recently the state's Republican congressional delegation and state GOP Senate caucus both sent letters to Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom's administration, raising concerns about the impact on taxpayers. Rob Seltzer, a certified public accountant in Los Angeles and a member of the California Society of Certified Public Accountants, said, "It does open a can of worms. It really depends upon how fast the state is able to send out a corrected form. Ohio has set up a telephone hotline and created a website allowing residents to report identity theft. Once the state confirms fraud has been committed, taxpayers will receive a corrected 1099-G form." According to spokesman Thomas Betty, recently 62,000 people had filed a report. Betty said, "It's really easy for somebody to be like, 'This isn't my problem. They sent me the form. I've never been to Ohio.' Still, you need to take care of this," adding, "Every unemployment system in the country is dealing with this massive amount of fraud." Last month, the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, said it is likely that many victims won't be able to get a corrected tax form in time to file their federal taxes. In those instances, the Internal Revenue Service says taxpayers should ignore the 1099-G form and file their taxes without reporting the fraudulent income. Christina Elliott, owner of BEM Financial Services, worries that the process could delay tax refunds for people who are counting on them to make it through the pandemic. She has two clients, one in California and one in Georgia, who say they received incorrect forms showing they received as much as $27,000 in unemployment benefits last year. Christina Elliott said about the Inland Revenue Service, they're literally going to have to investigate each one, adding, these people already had their identity stolen and they didn't know about it. Here lies another problem where they will be waiting months just to get their tax refunds that are owed to them. The problem could be most acute in California, where officials mailed close to 8 million tax forms last month, more than five times the number they send in a normal year. The State Employment Development Department said it had updated its website and hired an additional 300 agents for its call center, training them on how to handle questions about the 1099-G forms. Rooting out fraud and identity theft has been a purported struggle for the agency. A state audit release recently showed that from April to October, it responded to less than 2% of fraud reports. By November, it had a backlog of more than 77,000 such reports. That likely included a report by Greg Musson, who owns a business near Fresno in California. State officials contacted his company in September to let him know one of his employees had filed for unemployment benefits in March. Greg Musson was surprised to learn that person was him. He put a freeze on his credit and filed a fraud report with the state unemployment department, but so far hasn't heard anything back. He said, "To know that somebody has my information and has been able to get really pretty personal with it, it's like your home being broken into." Carol Williams, Chief Deputy Director of Operations for the California Employment Development Department, said people who get incorrect tax forms should fill out a worksheet on the department website, adding that the website has been busy. Some lawmakers worry the agency might not be able to handle the workload. Republican State Senator Scott Wilk said one of his constituents was dumbfounded to get a notice that he owed taxes on $11,000 in unemployment benefits. Scott Wilkes said, "In a time when we really need people to have confidence in their government, going through this pandemic and rolling out the vaccine, the last thing we need to do is additionally shatter their confidence in our ability to be competent."
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا إله إلا الله الله يا الله والله أكبر.
This is a part of a speech delivered on January 16th, 1980 by the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini. Subject: Most Superior Migration from Carnal Desires. The migration from the abode of nature is likely to be from the self. The abode might be the abode of man's self. That is the nature, that is the abode of the self that is imprisoned in it. The noble Quranic verse might mean that one who departs from this abode of self might turn to Allah and His Messenger. It might be departure from things that urge men to have regard for the world and worldly ideals inhibiting men from reaching Allah and the truth of the attachments men have to the world.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We were talking about the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini. As we know that he is a person who brought this Islamic revolution, and we are celebrating the victory anniversary of the Islamic revolution, we know that in regards to the politics and religion, he had a viewpoint in which he said, it is said by the Prophet as well, that there is no difference between the politics and religion. The politics is the part of religion. Now, why he was very much emphasizing on the politics being the part of the religion is because religion itself talks about justice. And when we talk about justice, we can see this aspect apparently in the life of Imam Khomeini. Being the leader, being the jurisprudent, being the a mystic, being a scholar, he was just and he was following a system that has justice. And that's what he wanted to bring in this country, in this state. When he was talking about the Islamic revolution, this revolution is not specified or it's not limited to the Iranian nation. It's not limited to the boundaries of Iran. It's a universal revolution. It can happen anywhere. Why? Because this revolution has justice in it. And the concept of justice, which being a Shia, he had believed in his belief, it was that Allah is just. Allah is just. And Allah also has promised in the Quran that He will send the last successor. He will send a successor who will bring the justice in the world. And that is Imam Mahdi. So Imam Khomeini had this belief that this system of justice should be applied in the societies. And the day we are successful in applying the system of justice in the societies, the Imam of the time, the infallible Imam, the leader of the time, will reappear. The Imam Mahdi will reappear.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.